Dear Father Christmas, Santa just wasn't part of my childhood English lexicon. It has been a struggle to find something to ask for this Christmas, and for many Christmases past. My family's been taking your name in vain for the past few years and playing bad Santa in lieu of proper presents. Last year, my mother won pink mink false eyelashes, my father a slightly used copy of 50 Shades of Grey, which he thought was a book on ageing, and Felix lucked out with a tin of crushed tomatoes. Competition's fierce this year to top the lenticula of Jesus arm wrestling with Satan and winning when you tilted the picture. So I don't need to ask for anything to be wrapped under the tree, but there is something that I would find such a wonderful power, a thing that could reshape my life. I wonder if you could assist me to control the vagaries of time. Not that I want to grasp eternal life, I'm not that energetic. Nor am I nostalgic enough to want to travel back in time, or brave enough to want to see my future. What I want a handle on is the way time slips away when you aren't looking, races on before you've finished where you are, lands you slap bang in a place you aren't prepared to be yet, and then leaves you there like a shag on a rock when you want to be moving on. If I could slow some things down, speed some up, and finish what I want to do before I have to start something less compelling, I believe this could be the key to success and happiness.
That letter to Santa comes from Lydia Pearson, co-founder and co-director of the Brisbane-based international fashion label Easton Pearson. Lydia, welcome to RN Summer Breakfast.
Thank you, Kathy.
Now, based on that letter to Santa, it sounds like the pace of life is worrying you?
It's more the unevenness of the pace of life that worries me, actually. It's just the way time changes its speed when you're not expecting it.
I'm really with you on that one. It struck a chord with me that the idea of being able to time shift, to bank that time when you're sitting in an airport lounge or sitting in a doctor's appointment office and move it to those frantic times when you'd like to spend a bit more time with your kids.
When my children were small, my mother said to me, "Time goes faster. Every year is faster than the year before until your children leave home, and then all of a sudden it starts to slow down again." My mum didn't work, so for her that was true in every aspect of her life. And it's certainly been true for me in the fact that once the children left home, my personal life was much slower and at a much easier pace, but my work life hasn't really changed.
Do you ever think about jumping off the treadmill occasionally and taking a gap year, learning to paint or renovate a French villa?
I never think about things like that, but we spend a lot of time in India when we're working, and time morphs completely when you're in India. There is a different time frame completely.
A much slower life?
A much slower life. People have a completely different concept of what time is. And actually, as I was thinking about this interview, I realised that one of the big dichotomies in my life is the fact that we live our lives on a Western time frame and our businesses run on a Western time frame. But a lot of what we do is actually articulated in India. And in India, it doesn't matter how long it takes to do something. Time is very, very cheap. It's the cheapest commodity there is. And so people aren't interested in timetables. They're not interested in telling you how many days it's going to take until this embroidery is finished. They just don't understand the concept. They say, "But we're working very hard."
It's something you find in Asia. I remember years ago travelling to Indonesia for the first time on Java and being explained jam jelat, rubber time. And it's something that you just have to accept and go along with, and then it sort of makes life quite pleasant.
They don't have an expression like that in India. Maybe they don't even need one, because it's completely endemic in everything that happens. You know, I'm wearing a little pair of handmade traditional Indian sandals today. I wear them all the time. And they have these tiny little plaited cords that are done by hand. They cost nothing. You can buy them on the road. And yet they must have taken so long to make. They've got tiny little punched edges. Everything's made by hand and it's all exquisite. And nobody thinks time is money. I think that's really the thing. Time and money don't bear any relationship to each other in India.
Speaking of that exquisite work, which you incorporate in a lot of your fashion, that sort of time-consuming embroidery and the work that's done, there's always a concern and an unease about whether there's exploitation involved behind that. How do you monitor that?
We've got a completely first-hand relationship with the people that we work with in India. The workroom that does our embroidery in Mumbai was set up by our friend who we've been working with ever since we started there 25 years ago. and we know all the people who do the work. So that's easy. We don't have that dichotomy there. We make some things in China with factories, and we have a second or a third-hand relationship with those people. It's much more difficult to make sure that everything that's being done in your name is above board. And anyone who manufactures has got those dilemmas, because right from the raw materials that you're using, it's very difficult to know exactly how they've been produced. So when we buy silk, for example, unless we've actually commissioned that to be woven and we know the village where it's being woven, which does happen sometimes, we've really got absolutely no idea.
You have to take it on face value.
Yeah, and no way to control that. But as much as we can, we try to keep a very close relationship with all of the people that we work with.
Let's talk a bit about your business. Of course, it's a partnership with Pamela Easton, and I've read the two of you are very, very close. Is there ever any creative I think 24 hours a day for much of your time.
We always say we spend way more time together than we do with our partners.
Is there ever creative tension?
Not very, very subliminal creative tension. Yes, of course there is.
Is it polite creative tension, is it?
It's an extremely formalised and respectful creative tension. Yes, of course there is. I mean, you can't work together like that in a creative industry and not have that tension. And it's not that we have separate roles in the creative part of our business. We absolutely work together. We spent all day yesterday with photocopies of little tiny medieval icons trying to place them on an embroidery. And we've just got this this method now of working where it's like a dance. One steps in, one stands back, the other one looks, the other person knows they can step in and say, well, what if we changed it like this? So it's become much easier. And of course there must be a compromise. There's been some kind of creative compromise, but we're both pretty pragmatic people. We're not completely artists.
I need to ask you about the fashion industry, especially the Australian fashion industry. We've of course been hearing a lot of stories about the industry contracting, and of course many well-known names have gone into receivership or closed in recent times. Is the industry in trouble? Is it real trouble?
Absolutely, yes. And every aspect of the industry is in trouble. It's been going to be in trouble since the Button Report in the 1980s, when they decided that Australia wasn't really going to be a manufacturing country anymore and that the fashion industry wasn't viable.
So what's the answer here?
I think the only way that we're going to survive is, well, I hope this is right, is to become very important to the customers that we already have and to try to do something that can't be replicated anywhere else. So we're in a good position for that. We're very lucky. Finally, our hour has come where people are going to understand that they can't get that kind of handwork.
Lydia, going back to your letter, we're going to have to wrap up shortly, but I want to go back to your letter. In terms of slowing things down, I noticed that you play the ukulele and sing. Any chances of a spin-off career here?
I don't think I'd be very successful. The singing I definitely don't do by myself, and the ukulele too. The ukulele is a very, very, very amateur amusement. Singing is one of the most important things in my life, and I've been singing with a group of girls for the last 15 years, and it's just a group of friends, intensely good friends, and it's very, very difficult for us to get together. We're all extremely time poor, and if I could make time slow down, I would make our singing sessions last for 2 weeks instead of 2 hours.
Lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming in today on
RN
Summer Breakfast.
Kathy. Thank you very much.